Sports Time Radio. All sports, all the time.
It's the day before Thanksgiving here on Sports Time Radio. I'm the Big Jack, and with me today, probably one of my oldest friends who I probably should have dragged on here a long time ago. We didn't discuss the name, so I guess we're just going to go with Hometown Hank. Hank, thanks for coming on Sports Time Radio finally, buddy. How you doing?
I'm doing all right, John. As we talked earlier, it's been a long, long time since we've talked, but I don't know that too many people probably played more sports with anybody else than we played together over the years back in the day. All those pickup games of everything, man.
Yeah. So if you'd like to call in, talk to Hank or I, 646-478-3753 is the number to do that. If not, feel free to email us, sportstimeradio@hotmail.com. Anything else you need, get on over to sportstimeradio.com. Now, since it is Wednesday, there was a new blog that popped up over there tomorrow morning, so swing on by, take a look at that. Of course, while you're at sportstimeradio.com, hit that link, follow it over to the Sports Time Radio Facebook page. And, hey, you went all the way, go over there. Go ahead and give it a like. Don't forget we have the Twitter feed as well, which is at Sports Time Radio. Feel free to look me up on Twitter as well. I am at Burke Time. And, Hank, I'm going to guess you don't have a Twitter account yet?
No, I may be old, brother, and the answer to that is incorrect. I do have one, but if I knew how to use it, it would be a miracle. I just have one so I can follow other people.
So you sound like Mr. Fantasy. We set him up with an account, and I don't know if he ever managed to do anything with it.
No, I like to just follow along with some professional athletes, and that's about it.
And, you know, before I do ask you this first question, I do want to know, did you put your Bernard King jersey on to do the podcast today?
I did not, but I can assure you this is not a lie. I'm looking straight at it. Along with Jim Palmer, Cal Ripken, Tony Gwynn, Salvador Perez, Hank Aaron, Andrew Luck, and you name it. I'm looking at a number of jerseys right now.
That was the first thing that popped into my head. But anyways, I want to pick up with you where we left off with Dan yesterday. We were talking, you know, the Lions host the first Thanksgiving day game tomorrow. They always get that, one of the privileges of doing that. And they have kind of what might be an odd quarterback situation. Matthew Stafford is going to be out. He apparently has broken bones in his back. I don't know why he's not on IR. They've been using Jeff Driscoll, but he came up with a hamstring injury. Now, their third stringer is a guy named David Blau, who's an undrafted rookie out of Purdue. So the question that immediately came up that I would kind of wanted to know your interest in is, why didn't they sign Colin Kaepernick? They were at the tryout.
Well, not knowing that this question was coming, obviously, and just thinking off the top of my head, I think there's probably three answers to that. The first answer is, even if they did sign Kaepernick, that would have been, what, a week and a half ago maybe that the tryout was?
Yeah. Yeah.
Even though he was a veteran for, you know, so many years, he hasn't played in a couple of years. Could he have come in, offered anything as far as learning the playbook, learning the terminology, everything that was needed to get ready to play in an NFL game? Again, even though he was a veteran, not sure that a week and a half with not playing all those years, he would have been able to get there, done that in time. The second answer is, you know, this Blau kid, I'm sure he's been sitting in those meetings all this time, even though he's probably been on a practice squad and been called up. At least he's probably been running some scout team stuff. He's been getting reps, not that reps are game speed, but at least they're of some speed as opposed to Kaepernick just working out in the gym and throwing to high school receivers once in a while. The third answer, and I'll just go ahead and say it, John, because I don't know how many people are afraid to say something like this. I just believe that the Lions, like most teams, don't want to deal with the circus that'll come along with that if they sign them.
Yet now, you know, since it is kind of more or less a Kaepernick topic than anything else, Do you think he helped himself or hurt himself with that kind of tryout fiasco? You know, originally there were like 25 or 26 teams ready to look at him. Then he moved it 60 miles away, and he ended up with just six teams following him along. Bad move, good move, or do you think it really mattered?
I don't think it really mattered. I think you can look at it from both angles, but without knowing all the ins and outs behind it, again, it's easy to say that it looked like a PR move from the Kaepernick team, because the more publicity that they can put on him, the more light shines on him, the more he can complain or be positive, depending on how he wants to go about it. If he would have just showed up at the NFL tryout, signed that waiver that they wanted him to sign, and went on with it, you probably would have not heard another word about Kaepernick in the next 3 days after that. Tryout was done. Nobody wanted him, off and gone. But they don't have dumb people running his team. They got smart people. And let's see, if we don't have the tryout there, we bail on it, we run our own tryout. Now it becomes more of a story than just a tryout. So, yeah, I personally, as you, I don't think it helped him any, but I'm not sure anything was going to help him. I think he's too far removed from NFL play at this point, and I don't think anybody wants to get their hands in that pie at all.
So you think it's over for him? You think his career's done?
Personally, I do. I'm not the NFL commissioner or any of the owners that have the money to sign him, but you know, it's 3 years removed. I mean, can you go out and sign Peyton Manning? He's only been out 3 years, right?
Yeah.
You could, but I'm saying, is he going to do you any good? Granted, he's a lot older, but still, that my point being, him played for 3 years, it's kind of tough.
Yeah. You know, I guess the weird thing that always ends up throwing, you know, I guess we'll call it logs on the fire, is, you know, apparently teams reached out to guys like, Dan Orlovsky and even Matt Hasselbeck, who've been working in the studio in Bristol for the past couple of years. So it's weird that, you know, they reach out to these guys, but they don't go to to Kaepernick, who you think would be a better quarterback at this point.
Exactly. I'm not going to disagree with that. There's no doubt. No doubt that he would be a much better quarterback than those guys right now. Athletic-wise, probably the ability to lead his team to wins over those guys, because he can improvise still. He can do different things that those guys can't. But I think it comes back to the NFL probably being hypocritical. And what I mean by that is, in years past, if you look at all these other guys that created issues and had issues off the field, it didn't seem like the NFL, the owners, cared. As long as the guy could help them win or sell things, help them win and sell things. Well, now you got somebody that might be able to help you win, but nobody wants to go get them because of what they're worried about. I believe that, you know, it's their fans are going to, there's going to be a backlash to a certain extent of any team that touches them because of the baggage that comes with them. Again, I think that's hypocritical because, you know, outside of Maurice Jones-Drew, who nobody touched either, once he went through his troubles, everybody else gets second, third chances. And not that Kaepernick did anything actually wrong. He just protested.
I guess it's a lot to ask, like you said. I mean, we're basically talking about a guy who is a backup quarterback. So you figure that keeps teams away from him a little more. Do you think if he was a starter, he'd have a job?
You mean if he was a starter?
If he was of starter quality, let's say.
You know what? Not to throw a wrench in this thing. As I told you, I'm in my sports room. I just see a football about to knock a Johnny Unitas statue off a shelf. I can't have that. We can't have that break. Yeah, that's a good question, John. If he was a starter quality, would he have a job? Well, you know, compared to some of the guys that are in the league, I think you could probably think he is starter quality. If you look around the league, some of the quarterback play, gets me shaking my head. I just think not to keep falling back to it, and but I just believe down deep that that is what is holding this whole thing back of him seeing a job again, is the fact that the owners are afraid to get into that pool with him and worry about what the backlash would be if they sign him based off what he did a few years ago. I don't think anybody's looking at his talent. I think everybody would agree the talent's there, but they just won't say it.
Yeah, because, you know, all the reports coming out of the tryout were pretty positive. You know, he showed good arm strength and good mobility and, you know, all the things you would want. But do you think maybe that since it's so late in the year, there's a chance he gets a call to come to camp next year when a team has an entire training camp to work with him instead of plugging him in week 12 and trying to get anything out of him, or week 13, I guess we actually are now.
Absolutely. I think it would take the right owner, the right organization, somebody who can dig in deep and, you know, have the right answers when asked questions. I don't doubt for a second he could get called into quite a few different camps next year. But that'll all depend on probably free agency, who walks, who doesn't, how the depth charts look for each team. You know, on a selfish note, there's a lot of people talking about, well, why don't the Colts grab him? And you, as you well know, John, that there's probably not a bigger Colt fan around than myself. Personally, I don't want the Colts reaching into that pool, not because of anything he did, just because I think it's been 3 years and they got some guys there that they, if Brissett got hurt, you know, let's get Chad Kelly in there and give him a chance. Some of the guys that are probably equal to him or comparable to him, but haven't been given a chance.
Yeah. I can totally understand why teams stay away from him. But the other kind of, you know, I guess we'll call it an odd thing that came out of this Detroit quarterback situation is, you know, they reached out to Josh Johnson and they actually wanted to sign him. But he had just signed with the XFL maybe a week or two ago, and they refused to release him. Now, you know, obviously he would have made a whole lot more money, even if he just sat on the bench in Detroit, he would have made a whole lot more money than he's going to make in the XFL. Mm-hmm. Do you think this could hinder the XFL's ability to sign people by not letting this guy go? Because, you know, their season doesn't start till February, and it's not like Detroit is going to make a long playoff run and he wouldn't have been available.
Oh, I think absolutely it'll hurt them signing players who might still have a dream or a want to get back in the NFL. Because let's face it, an ex NFL player who has been released, cut, what have you, who still has the drive to play in the NFL, the only way they can show they're ready is to play in another league, like the XFL. But if they're not going to let them go, why would they bother going there? Then they're, you know, they're under contract. But I can see it from the XFL side. Wait a second. We got one of a few. I think they've got three guys that have NFL experience as quarterbacks. We don't want to let those guys go. So I can see it from their side as well.
Yeah, you know, but don't you think, I mean, if they could have sat down with them and said, hey, okay, we'll let you do this as long as when their season ends, you come back. I mean, you know, there had to be a simpler way to work that out, right?
Absolutely. No question. You sit down and you work it out. Hey, this is going to be good for both of us, Josh. We're going to sign, you know, you're signed with us, but the NFL wants you. That shows that we got quality players in our league still. So you go play for them.
Right.
And when that league ends, you come back and join up with us and continue to get fresh and to work your game. And then next training camp for the NFL, you go back there and see if you can hook up with some. It's a win-win. But there's so many fingers in the pie these days, John, with sports. The agents, the management teams, the this, the that, the others, nobody can just sit down and talk anymore. I'll bet if you got the owner and Josh Johnson together themselves and let them talk, they would have worked it out. But you probably are, they're probably four or five guys removed from talking to each other.
Just, you know, like the more I heard about it, it was just kind of like, this is just, it's just so odd. There had to be a different way to get this done, or, you know what I mean? Who knows if he'd even made a difference this week with the, you know, being he would have probably signed on Monday and would have been expected to play tomorrow. That would have been a bit of a stretch.
Yeah, a little bit. And I'm not all up, to be honest, on what the XFL is doing right now. But if memory serves me right, I know the NFL has always been looking for kind of a feeder program, if you will, a place for guys to go after college, the 4A player, if you will. Well, that's the XFL.
Yeah.
You guys work together on this thing. So, I don't know.
Yeah. I think they were hoping that the AAF was going to be able to provide that. But I don't know if you watched any of that football, but, man, it wasn't very good.
I watched – I'll be honest with you. I think I watched about a half of it, and I was like, I think I can go pick up some guys and we can probably play against them. Of course, we couldn't at this point, but that was my thought process.
I would hold it on and, I would really honestly try and, give it a shot. And, yeah, I would get about halfway through or a quarter through and be like, man, I can't watch this anymore. I mean, I don't even know if it was college level.
It probably was maybe Division III level if you had to pick.
Yeah, no.
And not that's a knock on Division III, so nobody yell at me on that. It's just what it is.
being Thanksgiving, of course, it's basically a football holiday as you would look at it. We get three games. It starts with, Bears at Lions, then we get Bills at Cowboys, and the nightcap now, there's three games now, Saints at Falcons. How much football do you get to watch or plan on watching, or how does that go for you with it being a holiday? I know you said you're going to the in-laws or something.
Yeah, well, being the holidays, it's still there, it is what it is. It's there for Thanksgiving and it's there for family, but you've been around me since, we've known each other since we were, 10, 12 years old. It's sports for me, and I will not miss a single play of football, to answer your question, on Thursday. I will watch all three games. I won't miss a play. I am married to a lady who will follow that exact same plan. She will rather watch football on Thursday than sit around and play board games with family members and stuff. So we won't be missing any football.
Who, by the way, could wish it is your wife's birthday, so happy birthday Stacy, while we're here and thinking about it, so before we forget. So
yeah, well, I'll tell her you said so. She might, who knows what she's doing upstairs. See, she's probably watching I'm just gonna go on a limb, North Dakota State versus Wyoming in lacrosse or something. Who knows?
I believe there's plenty of college basketball on right now, so she probably has a game on. So,
well, not to get off topic real quick, but you would appreciate this being her birthday. She picked out her own birthday present 2 weeks ago when we were down in Indianapolis at a Colts game, and she's a PE teacher. She wore it today, and I don't know how many, I'm not going to say her age, older women would wear this. But this is the kind of woman she is. She bought a Chitwood jersey from the Hoosiers, the movie Hoosiers, basketball jersey. And that's what she wore today. And not a single student knew what she was wearing, and only a few teachers knew what she had on. But she had to have that jersey. So.
Yeah, that's I could see not many people know. And, I mean, of course, you and I would know immediately, what it is. But – yeah, there. I could see quite a few people struggling to figure out who or what that was.
Just trying to paint the picture of the type of woman I'm lucky to be married to.
switching up sports on you here, like I like to do. I'm interested to know, and this is, I don't get to talk much NASCAR here, but the big news coming out after Kyle Busch won everything. 2020 is Jimmy Johnson's last year. Have you kind of stayed with NASCAR, or do you still keep up with what goes on, or has that kind of slipped on you?
John, to answer your question, I don't know that I've missed a lap of NASCAR in over 25 years, not a single lap. If I can't watch it live, I tape it and I watch it the night of the race. So, yeah, I definitely have kept up with it. No problem there. As far as Jimmy Johnson, it's like a lot of other sports. It's becoming more about results, which it should be at that level, what you can bring in for sponsorship, and a young man's sport. and either if you want to call it a sport, a lot of people will argue with me that it's not a sport, but we'll call it a sport for now.
Hey, it's a sports podcast, so we're calling it a sport, and
yeah, that's right.
not an issue. So now, are you worried? Because it seems like, you know, they've lost a lot of NASCAR star power. I mean, you know, we're talking Jeff Gordon, Dale Earnhardt, Tony Stewart. Now you add Jimmy Johnson to that list. We seem to be kind of running out of guys with name recognition. Are these the Chase Elliotts, Ryan Blaneys, are these guys going to be able to step in and fill in? Or is the sport going to kind of maybe suffer a little drop in popularity?
No, I think you're definitely going to drop in popularity a little bit, but I don't think it's going to go away completely. One of the things that's bothered me the last few years about NASCAR is people say, well, the ratings are down and the attendance is down and this and that and the other. It is. But I was saying 20 years ago when they were at the peak, I mean, they were on top of the world. They were rivaling NFL for viewership and everything. Everything has its ebbs and flows. And they had reached their pinnacle. But like anybody else, John, they got greedy. And, okay, we got 70,000 people coming to this race. Well, let's build 20,000 more seats and let's get the 90 and make that money. And that was great. That was working at every track. I mean, every track for about 4, 5, 6 years. And then people got their fill of it, the fad, the new fans that came in. They go, okay, I've seen it. I've been there. I'm going to revert back to what I like, which isn't NASCAR, whoever these people are. And now you've fallen back into the late 70s, early 80s, where there's still 50, 60,000 people at these races. But it doesn't look like there's many there because the stands hold 120,000 people because they built so many stands. So the tracks are starting to get smart and they're starting to take seats out and make it look make it look smaller so the crowd looks bigger. But the popularity thing is, to answer your question, the reason the popularity is going away with these drivers is they've taken the personality out of the sport. Everybody's politically correct. So you can't have Dale Earnhardt Jr., Rusty Wallace, Darrell Waltrip, Ricky Rudd, these guys, Bill Elliott, these guys giving their input, giving their exact thoughts on what they think happened. Now guys have their team managers. You watch a race, at the end of a race, there's always somebody walking right next to the driver. That's their manager to help them. Don't say this, don't say that. It's all watered down. So there's no personality or character in it anymore. And yes, that hurts it.
Am I the only one who likes it when the drivers fight with each other after a race?
No. I think most people like it, but like anything else, you know, the do-gooders, we can't have that. We can't have that, and they try to put an end to it. You know, these guys would tell you, Darby, John Darby, who used to run Rockford Speedway, I know John Darby, he's the vice president now of the Xfinity Series, but anyhow, these guys would tell you, hey, we want these guys to fight all they want in the infield, not in front of the cameras. Well, that doesn't make any sense. Fight in front of the cameras. That draws attention.
You would think that would be a better shot there.
Yeah, I think NASCAR will be fine. It's just reached its heyday, that's all. It's going to be fine. It's just not going to be as big as it was. That's all.
Well, you know, I always chuckle when, you know, people point to ratings and ratings being down and stuff because, you know, obviously the older people like you and I aren't doing it. But, you know, there's a lot of people who will, you know, they'll stream the race, you know, and they'll watch it that way. And that doesn't show up in your television ratings. So just because the ratings may be down doesn't mean people aren't watching it. It's just there's so many other ways to get, you know, television programs, be it sports or whatever weekly episodic program you're into, you know, and there's just no way to count that.
So
I'm always
episodic?
A little. Yes, I did, believe it or not. So.
it's kind of a big word right there. I'm just trying to wrap my head around
that. Don't spell it, okay? But yeah, so, you know, I mean, how many people are actually watching? You know, I mean, So it's always so tough to tell. So I always take that with a grain of salt when they're like, well, you know, look at how the ratings are down. Because, you know, if you're looking at that, I mean, they're saying the NBA ratings are down 27% at the beginning of the season this year. So.
Yeah, I hear you. They're smarter people than me, and someday they're going to figure out how they can truly see, as you're saying, who's actually viewing the game and how are they viewing the game, not just on TV. Yeah. And you're absolutely right. What's funny is you go to a NASCAR race, and I don't know how many you've been to, if any, lately, but a lot of people will be at the race in their campers or whatever, John, and they don't actually buy a ticket to go into the race. They will then watch the race on their scanners or their cell phones right in the you know, the campgrounds. And nobody's counting them.
You know, I haven't been in a long time. We went to that Michigan race many years ago, and that was the last one I made it to. Have you been to Joliet? Have you been to Chicagoland Speedway?
Yep. Haven't missed a race there since they opened it.
Oh, yeah? Okay. Well, that's cool, because the other guy I do the podcast with, Dan, he doesn't live far from there. I've been trying to get him to go over and check one out, you know, even if it's just, you know, an Xfinity race. I was like, get over there and see what it's like.
Oh, yeah. No, don't miss. And, you know, I got a couple former players that I've coached at, you know, work on pit crews. So I get to, you know, go down and meet with them and hang out with them in the infield and stuff before races. So it's always a good time.
Oh, that's nice. I didn't realize you had connections like that.
Oh, yeah. Unfortunately, I do.
Oh, well, that's a big plus, right? No,
it is.
You get that checked out. You know, and now I haven't looked closely. I want to see if I can get it here real quick while we're yammering. But they said they rearranged the end of the schedule for next year. It's not going to be Miami where the series ends. It's not going to be Homestead. Do you know off the top of your head where they're going
to
end up?
Yep, straight to
Phoenix. Okay.
Yeah, which will probably add a little more excitement to it because it's more of a short track with a little more bumper involved.
So, yeah, looking here, God, where did they move Homestead to?
Yeah, that I'm not sure because I think if memory serves me, they moved the Indianapolis right up to the last race of the regular season to try and draw interest there, if I'm not mistaken. I could be, but they're always tinkering with the schedule nowadays, which is okay with me. That's fine. Move it around. The race is a race.
Yeah, I actually think it would be kind of a cool idea, wouldn't you, if the final race kind of almost rotated between tracks to kind of give everybody a chance to host it?
Well,
you know, almost like they do.
Yep. Super Bowl's never in the same place. World Series, you know, moves around depending on who's playing in it. So move the championship race around. No doubt about it. Good idea, in my opinion. The problem is you get the owners who want the money, the ticket, the gate, and they don't want to lose it.
Yeah, you know, that's always the thing with everything, though, isn't it? I mean, you get, you know, everybody saying, well, let's drop games or drop races or drop whatever, and yeah, you don't want to give up that money.
No, not at all. But again, they live in a big different financial world than we do, and sometimes it's just hard to fathom. It's easy for us to sit here and say do this, do that, you know, and come up with this idea. Well, there's a lot more to that puzzle probably than guys like us know.
Yeah, well, I could imagine the stuff they have to attempt to juggle or what they're trying to do. That's just got to be insane. So now do you have a driver? You got a new driver you like, or you got a driver you've stuck with all the years? Who's your guy?
Well, I'll just go back through the generations real quick. Alan Kowicki, who is obviously no longer with us, was my guy for the longest time. He was a family friend, and I'll never forget the day he died. It was on April Fool's Day, and I was teaching at Hampshire High School, and a couple people called me back when we had these big old giant cell phones and say, hey, did you hear about Alan? And I'm like, what? And I thought they were kidding because it was April Fool's Day. And then I heard it on the radio. I'm like, oh, no. So anyhow, Alan Kowicki probably was my favorite driver way back in the day. And then once he passed on, I started following Jeff Burton and was a big Jeff Burton fan for a long time and got to meet him a few times and do some things for him, some drawings I did for him. And then when he retired, I just kind of sat back and just continued to watch the sport and couldn't grasp onto anybody, really. And now I, to be honest, I just watch racing. I just love racing. But if I'm sitting there, you name two of the three guys I like to follow. I'll follow Chase Elliott, especially since he got out of the 24 car. That bothered me. But Chase Elliott, Ryan Blaney, and Austin Dillon, about the three guys I'll follow every race and would like to see them do good.
Yeah, well, so, yeah, I'm for sure you didn't say Bubba
Wallace. Bubba came from the diversity program NASCAR has, and not that that's a bad thing at all, but I just think and about the same time as Danica Patrick came along, and I'll just say it, I think Bubba Wallace and Danica took rides away from two other probably drivers that were more talented, but because they could bring in the money and they fit what NASCAR was trying to do, they got the seats. And I get that point. I just don't have to agree with it.
No, yeah, you know, I mean, that's, you know, the one thing, you know, the debate always is about Danica, but the, you know, when it boils right down to it, she didn't win.
Nope, she did not produce, not at all, not on any level. If she was, and I'm going to say it again, if she was a guy, she would not have lasted that long in her car, not for a second.
No.
But
oh, yeah, no, no way.
Yeah. But again, it's a big business.
Yep.
They were looking at the bottom line, not necessarily results overall with her.
Yeah, well, you know, and that's the thing. I mean, it's probably a little easier to go somewhere and get a sponsorship with Danica Patrick than it would be, you know, a driver who's very similar to all the other drivers. So.
Yeah, absolutely. You hit it right on the head. You walk in with Danica Patrick to GoDaddy, and or you walk in with Hank Faulkner. Who are you going to give the money to? Danica
yeah.
Patrick. Makes sense. So I get it.
Even if the other guy's a better driver, you know. It's
yes,
just,
absolutely. Yep.
You know, she's going to get
John,
more eyeball.
Yep. To go back to your question about the character, that's the thing, too. Everything is so commercial. They need their drivers out front nowadays. They have to be well-spoken. They have to be educated to an extent. And, you know, you go back 20, 30 years ago, these guys – and I'll say it because that's what I was. They were a lot of them were hillbillies. They weren't educated, and
yeah.
they just spoke their mind. Well, you can't do that now. That's not what sells. What sells is commercials, and they got to have these people out there in front of the camera. So that's why the characters are disappearing a little bit.
You know, it would be quite interesting to see a Richard Petty or a Dale Earnhardt Sr. in, you know, kind of the atmosphere of today with the way they, you know, they spoke and, you know, all that kind of stuff, how that would go over. I guess there would probably be NASCAR apologies every other week, wouldn't there?
There would be, but I think it would actually be refreshing too. I think people would grasp onto that. You know, I just really think they look at, not jump in sports, but jump back to the NFL. What was the quarterback for Jacksonville that just got taken out? Gardner Minshew.
Yeah.
The people loved him. They loved him because he was different, you know. He had the hairdo, the mustache, the cut-off jean shorts, just the good old boy type thing. People just grabbed hold of him, man. People are looking for freshness. They're not looking for the same thing over and over, which we just jammed down their throat with sports anymore.
Yeah. All right, well, let's move into the sport that, I mean, I guess if I had to say, I would say is your wheelhouse, and that would be baseball. And I am just kind of dying to get your opinion on the Astros cheating scandal. How are you? You know, how did that go over with you, and what's kind of your point of view of it?
Okay. Well, I'll try to make it simple. Let's see, how am I going to say this? I don't have a problem with cheating on the baseball field. And what I mean with cheating is picking signs, relaying signs. Hey, here, you know, I'm coming up with some way of getting an advantage on the baseball field. What I have a problem with is it not being the human element of doing that. It's the technology side. If I'm at second base and I'm picking the guy's signs and I can, you know, hands out fastball, hands down off speed, leaning back, or, you know, whatever. However I want to come up with a way to relay to my guy in the box that I think I got the signs. Hey, that's gamesmanship, man. Do a better job of disguising your signs. But if it's coming from center field or somewhere else, cameras and, you know, cell phones and what have you, I think that is wrong. I do. And they have to make an example. When I say they, MLB has to make an example of someone once they catch them doing that. So it's not done. The old school way of picking and stealing signs, God bless. But not using technology. I'm not for that. There's just too much technology, John, in my opinion, in sports in general. And this is just another layer of it.
So, and what are you, you know, if you're sitting there and you're Rob Manfred, what's your punishment? What are you handing down?
Well, see, I don't believe – I've had this discussion with a lot of guys in the last week. And a lot of guys say draft picks, take draft picks away. Well, I don't believe that's the case in baseball, because you go back and tell me some draft picks. Nobody knows who draft picks are. Nobody knows who they are when it comes to baseball. Now, the baseball execs know who they are, but the general fan doesn't know and doesn't really care. They just want to see the pro players. And draft picks in baseball are such a crapshoot anyways, because you got 40, 50 rounds. You can get the Mark Graces and the Don Mattinglys and all those guys in the 30, 40th round, and the guys they took in the first round that year, you never hear from. I think it's almost a matter – I don't know that there's a good way to punish him, John, but I think it's got to be monetary and it's got to be huge. And when I say huge, I don't mean this NFL, here's $50,000. $50,000 of these guys is like 5 cents to me and you. It's just got to be outrageous that nobody will ever think about doing it again. A couple of guys I know said, you know, well, you got to strip their World Series win and this and that and the other. What? Really? What does that do? That doesn't do anything. That's like taking away Penn State's football trophy with the paternal thing or these. Those games already happened. If you want to take the trophies away, take them. Who cares? But the games already occurred, so we know who won them. I would hate to be in Manfred's shoes, because this is his Bud Selig steroid issue, if that makes sense. Selig is going to be tied to allowing steroids to happen for his that's his legacy. This could be Manfred's legacy, good or bad, depending on how he handles it. And I don't have the answer to that, to be honest. Curious what you think. How do you think?
You know, we had talked, you know, draft, you know, maybe punishing them with taking away some of their top draft picks. But the thing we kind of decided on was having them forfeit their international pool money as part of the punishment. No matter what the punishment ends up being, they have to give up that international pool money and they wouldn't be allowed to sign, you know, any foreign players, you know, and they've had some success with Gurriel. So they've dipped into that before. We thought that would be just a section of their punishment. But yeah, you know, it's so tough to say, you know, let's do this. And like, you know, we've had the callers that say, well, you know, you take away the World Series win, but you know, the players aren't giving back their rings. They won it.
Yeah. Yep, they got it, and they got their notoriety out of it.
But, yeah, that was kind of the one.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Now, the one thing we agreed on was the international bonus money. Other than that, I mean, it's kind of a crapshoot with things we came up with and other things that, you know, I've heard people talk about.
Right. That's a good point. The international money is a great point. The one thing I brought up once, and I had a couple guys agree with me, but one guy didn't, but that's okay, is I think you got to hurt the teams to an extent that it hurts them for a couple of years. So they feel the pinch. They feel the pinch at the box office. They feel the pinch in the win-loss columns. And I think the way you do that is, guess what? You cheated to gain an advantage. Now you're not going to have an advantage for at least 2 or 3 years. And what I mean by that, where I'm going, John, is you cannot sign a single free agent for X amount of years. You have to build your team from the ground up on your own starting now. You can't sign a free agent. that's going to cause them to lose for a few years. That's going to hurt them in pocketbooks, this, that, and the other.
Boy, I like that idea. Would that include re-signing their own? Would they have to let those guys go?
Didn't think of that, but, you know, you could go either way on that because they're free agents. Hey, guess what? You've lost your guy. You've lost the ability to sign your guy. Now, maybe you throw a wrench into that. Let's say you have a homegrown guy, a Correa, who becomes a free agent, for example. You can re-sign him because you drafted him. But Garrett Cole, for example, you brought him in. He's a free agent now. You do not get to sign him. He's gone.
Well, I like that. I like that idea better than the international pool money. I think that would be, yeah, you know, and you lay it on him for a couple of seasons, and, yeah, that could really impact the team, and I don't think anybody else would want to do that.
Nope. Oh, hey, no. Wait a second. If we get caught cheating and we can't make our team competitive because they're not going to let us sign free agents, because let's face it, building your team like the Cubs did, the Royals did, the Astros did, the Sox are doing now. Yeah, you got to do it in-house. You got to start with the minor leagues. But guess what puts you over the top in every one of those teams? That one or two free agent you sign. And if you can't sign those guys for 2 or 3 or 4 years, building that talent is going to be great, but it's going to take you years to reap the reward because you got to pay the punishment.
All right, somebody get Rob Manfred on the phone. I think we just solved this for him.
Well, I don't claim to be a genius, but I think I do know baseball a little bit, as you stated for me. Thank you.
No, that's definitely why, you know, I brought it to you. I mean, you're definitely, if I need, you know, anytime I have a baseball question or I need a baseball opinion, I end up sending you a message. So,
yeah, boy.
Yeah. But, you know, you did kind of bring up, you know, you brought up draft picks a little bit, and this leads me to something that just drives me bananas, and that's the new kind of analytical way to break down players, because what makes me goofy is I don't need all these sabermetric equations to tell me Mike Trout is a great player. What I need is a sabermetric equation to find me those guys, like you mentioned some of them, but, you know, like a Mike Piazza who was hung around till the 60th round or whatever. Why does it seem that these metrics only work with great players? Do you have any idea?
I don't have an idea to that particular question, John. I am not, I'm guessing you know from my posts on Facebook and other things, that I am not big on sabermetrics at all, on any level, because my opinion is very simple. You either can play the game or you can't play the game. I don't want to hear about your launch angle. I don't want to hear about your exit velocity. I don't want to hear about your spin rate. I don't want to hear any of that junk. I think a lot of that stuff was created by people who just can't watch the game for what it is, and they needed something to make it more exciting for them. Now, with saying that, I understand there's a place for everything if used right. I think the sabermetrics thing is just a way, another way to try and twist, if you will, and see, is this guy going to be good? Is that guy going to be good? His OPS plus average or whatever these goofy stats they have now. It's like, really? Can somebody just go watch the baseball game and see what the guy does with your eyes? Forget stats. Stats don't win games. I mean, me and you, nobody knows stats more than me and you. I believe that. I really, you know what we did growing up. We knew every stat in every sport. But that was the end stat. That was the end of the game stat. That wasn't what's going on in the game. I don't care what a guy can – what his paper says he can do. I want to know what he does, with two outs, two strikes, and a man on second, third, whatever the situation is. How does he act? And looking at numbers, in my opinion, doesn't tell you that. It helps, but it doesn't tell you that. And how they – but I agree with you. If they could come up with a way to find who these players are in the minors, a stat that truly shows who these guys are that come out of nowhere, great. That helps us all. But we don't need, as you said, John, we don't need these sabermetric guys or these so-called baseball geniuses telling us how good Mike Trout and Francisco Lindor and Mookie Betts. Really, we know they're great players. We don't need those stats. I don't get it. I think it's just another thing.
Yeah, it just kills me because, you know, I watch way too much of the MLB Network. And, yeah,
sure,
and I listen to these guys, Mike Trout this or, you know, like you said, Mookie Betts or, you know, Anthony Rendon. And it's like, guys, I've watched the games. I know what kind of players these are. You know, it's like, find me somebody else that's going to come up and, you know, come through big that I don't know about. I mean, you're not telling me anything I don't know. And I'm kind of under the impression that if you're a baseball fan, you know who's a good player. So I don't get the fuss over all this.
Sabermetrics, John, is to baseball is what AAU basketball is to the game of basketball. It's individual accomplishment. It's not a team thing. And two examples. Manny Machado and Bryce Harper are sabermetric gods. Do they help their team win? Has their team ever won? Nope. Show me when they've won. They just haven't. Now,
after Harper,
I don't know what I can say more than that.
You know. Yeah, they're both very good players. But,
well, yeah, no.
You know. I guess the other thing that, you know, what drives me nuts is why is it bad now to give yourself up to move a runner from second to third?
Do you really want my answer on that?
Yes. Because
okay,
I don't
this
know.
Is gonna be this is going to be an angle that you've probably never heard. And in before laughing it off or dismissing it or even accepting it, maybe give it some thought for a couple days or so. But it's not just baseball, it's other sports. But here's why the fundamentals, in my opinion, like you said, hitting behind a runner, moving a runner over, throwing to the proper base, hitting the cutoff, whatever those fundamentals are, here's why they're disappearing. Turn on ESPN Sports Center. What do you see?
Dunks
home
and three-pointers?
Yes, home run, great play, three-pointers. You don't see the game. Whatever the game is, baseball, football, basketball, whatever the game is, you name it, you don't see that. You see the quick highlight, the ooh-ah-oh moments. And today's society is all about instant gratification. Why would they show a guy hit a cutoff man and then the cutoff man throw behind the runner and nail him at second base? How exciting is that? Not very exciting, but it sure is the game, and it sure helps a team win. But they'll show you that guy that hit that 420-foot bomb in the eighth inning that put his team down by seven.
Yeah, but they don't show you the three strikeouts before you hit that bomb.
No, exactly. This is my point. They show the ooh-ah moments, and that's what kids watch, and that's what kids see. They don't see the game played. They don't see the instincts it takes to do those things. And then as these great athletes, because these kids that are older now, they are obviously better athletes than we were. They just don't know the games like we all did back in the day. But they can play the game. They can play the game. They can't play inside the game, if that makes sense. Don't know the other things that it takes. And it, frankly, let's get back to it. There's no ramifications if they don't do those things, John. There's no penalties. As long as they continue to produce these sabermetric numbers that you talked about, they're getting their paycheck. They don't have to produce the little things. But there are some players that do. You named one a minute ago. Anthony Rendon, in my opinion, if Bryce Harper got, what did he get last year? $325 million or something, which is, I don't even know what he got. He's not near the baseball player, in my opinion, than Anthony Rendon is. He might be a better athlete. He may be a better show person. He may be more individual and play to the cameras. Guess who helps you better? In my opinion, Anthony Rendon. Hits behind runners. Shortens his swing up with two strikes. Plays defense. Doesn't look at the camera and say, look at me, like a lot of these other guys do. So that, the fundamentals, to go back to my answer, I don't believe kids need to learn the fundamentals because they don't see the fundamentals. They only see the wow moments in those quick snippets on SportsCenter or on their Facebook page or what have you.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. You know, I mean, I did hear somebody else kind of point out that, you know, doing the fundamentals doesn't get you paid in today's game.
Well, absolutely doesn't. And
no.
Which makes me go back to, well, what do we need scouts for then? What do, in all these sports, what are they looking for? John, if you have a stopwatch and a clipboard, go be a scout because all you need to do is measurables. They all go off measurables in sports, not whether they can play the game. When I always tell people, if Walter Payton came out of college today, you would have never heard of Walter Payton. Nobody would know. He can't run that fast, so he wouldn't have, you know, stopwatch. He would have been one of the slowest guys at a combine. Gone. He certainly couldn't do a lot of things these other guys do, but he had heart, and he ran hard. Mike Singletary probably would have never played football if he came out today. He probably never seen pro football because he doesn't meet the measurables, his height, his speed. And they do that in baseball. Oh, you know, wait, who cares how fast I can run the 60? And when do I run the 60 in baseball? Show me when I run that far, that straight. Never. I don't know what people are looking for in sports today. They try to get too smart at it. The games have been around for a long time, John, any sport. The game themselves have not changed. The way we treat the games have changed as a society, and that just bothers me. But I'm that old curmudgeon.
trust me, I get the same thing, you know, when people start wanting to tell me what somebody's war is, and I'm just kind of like, okay, great, thank you. So,
yeah, thanks. I got your war. War. I still don't understand. I think I know sports and stats well, and I still don't understand that stupid stat.
I'll hear somebody tell me that, and I'll go, yeah, but he struck out with runners on second and third instead of choking up and just trying to put the ball in play, you know, with one out. He could have drove a run in with a ground ball, and he struck out.
And that's one of the things. Yeah, you're right. That's one of the things that used to drive me crazy about Frank Thomas. Hey, I'm not taking anything away from Frank Thomas. Great player. Great Hall of Famer. But the guy would have rather taken a walk, which he did, than reach out and hit a fly ball to right field with a man on third and drive that run in. Now he walks. The next guy comes up and hits a double play, and they're out of the inning. Get the runs in, man. But, you know, whatever. It helped my war or whatever it was at.
That's my new pet peeve is when a guy's standing in the box with one out and a runner on third and he doesn't shorten his swing with two strikes to make contact. He's still trying to hit the 480-footer. It's like, dude, just hit the ball. Just make contact, please. So
you're preaching to the choir. I don't need to say any more.
So, yeah, I just find that kind of maddening. But, you know, while we're on baseball, I'm interested to know so far, what do you think about these moves, you know, the Braves have made? I mean, you know, they added the closer with everybody said they need. You know, they went out and they got Will Smith right away. They reworked some money with Tyler Flowers and Nick Markakis. You know, they re-signed Chris Martin. They brought Darren O'Day back. And then, you know, yesterday they signed Travis Dinald.
Yep.
These are just kind of, you know, not huge free agent moves, but they're moves to fill needs the team had. Are you buying the route they're going early on here?
Well, yes, but let me first back up. Will Smith's best move was when he did I Am Legend. After that, it's all gone downhill for him. Now, the Braves, I think they're doing it smart because what they, like you said, they've identified their needs and they're going to fill them. But they're getting ahead of everybody. They're jumping ahead, and they're not getting into price wars. Maybe they're paying a little more than they need to because they're the front runner. They're out there first and not, you know, seeing what the market is. But they don't have to worry about that. Here's what I need. Here's what I'm willing to pay. I'm going to get it. I got no problem with that. Why sit back and wait? Get it done. You know, get everybody together. Get your game plan together. Get your roster together for the holidays. Good. Boom. We go into spring training. We're set. We don't have to wait and see like the last few years. Some of these guys, they're going to come in with 2 weeks left or a week left and we'll sign them because nobody signed them. No, I think the Braves got it figured out, and I think that might be the trend you see moving forward.
Yeah, well, I'm hoping we were going to get some earlier signings instead of having to wait till, you know, basically when spring training opened for guys to start signing.
Yeah, they I think the last couple of years were just a blip. I don't think it's going to be like that too much anymore. I think owners have gotten a little smarter, realizing that, you know, listen, we're going to try and sign you early. And if we don't sign you, we're going to spring training with the team we got. And we're not bringing anybody else in. And I don't know if that's money-driven, agent-driven, whatever it is. It just doesn't seem to benefit the teams to wait that long, any longer. It just, I mean, if you look at the teams that waited last year, waited and waited and waited and waited, what did they do? They didn't do much.
No, you know, and I think even the guys, you know, what was it, Kimbrel and Keuchel got signed late. And, you know, Keuchel was okay, but Kimbrel was really a bust for the Cubs, and then he ends up getting hurt anyways.
You hit it right on the head. And I was telling some people that back when it happened. I go, hey, this is a splash name. It's not a splash player right now, meaning Kimbrel. Yeah, everybody likes it. Hey, Greg, we're getting Greg Kimbrel. Well, the guy sat for what, almost 9 months before he threw a pitch? I take you back to the Kaepernick thing that we talked about when you opened the show. It's been 3 years. How much of a splash can he actually make if he hasn't played in so long? No, it's not apples to apples. It's different sports and different positions, but there's some point where game speed trumps sitting and waiting.
Yeah, and then, you know, maybe this is the other question that we always seem to pop up with here with free agents, and I'm wondering if this is something new or I maybe just missed it. It seems like every report I see on a free agent, they have him signing with the team where he grew up. You know, like Garrett Cole's going to be an Angel and Matt Bumgarner's going to the Braves. And, you know, just every, you know, no matter where this kid grew up, obviously except for the Latin players and the Japanese players, they're re-signing with the team where they grew up. And rarely does it happen. But why all of a sudden is this like the new thing?
Well, it's an easy way to get out in front and report. Think about it. If you're a reporter, how can you get that scoop? You know, how can you be the first one to put something out there? Well, hey, Garrett Cole, you know, he's a Southern California kid. Maybe he wants to sign with Anaheim. Let's throw that out there. Let's stir the pot. I don't think most, and you alluded to it, most of these even pan out where they go back home. It makes for a good story up front. Hometown kid's going to return. Again, fact of the matter is how many of these teams can afford their hometown kid or even maybe want the hometown kid. I think it's just an easy way to get a story started for most of the reporters, and there's probably not a lot of basis behind most of them.
Yeah, because humorously I heard the same guy report that not only Madison Bumgarner would sign with the Braves because he's from North Carolina, but Zach Wheeler would also sign there because apparently he's from Georgia. So I don't know how the Braves are going to afford all these guys. Apparently, they're all going to Atlanta.
Well, yeah, so. Sure they are. it's the place to be right now. They're spending money. They got their new stadium. Let's all go to Atlanta. No, you're right. They can't sign all those guys. And if they could, I mean, again, you go free agency. The splash usually doesn't work for most teams because they spend too much in and then they can't develop the rest of the team.
Yeah.
And you have to have players. You can't just have, and I'll use Harper and Machado again, you can't spend all your money in one spot and not be able to put other quality players around them. So I just think the hometown thing is overrated until a player gets maybe older and just wants to tie up his career.
Yeah.
Near where he lived.
Yeah, you're kind of oddly like Brian McCann did last year. He's going to play one more year. He's going to go back to Atlanta to do it.
Right. That was fantastic. Yeah, that was awesome. So,
it always laugh when I hear that is, you know, well, this guy's going to go back and play here. But, you know.
I don't think, John, these guys, it comes down, again, it's not necessarily the player, but maybe the agent. It comes down. Who's going to pay me the most money? And that bothers me. This team A is going to give me $20 million. Yeah, I'm going there because that's better than $17 million.
podcast resume. So there you go. But thanks for coming on and filling in. I know it was a little kind of last minute, but I appreciate it. So we're going to wrap up there. You know, the music that we're taking on. So again, thanks for coming on and helping out. We're not going to borrow from the holiday. We're going to be back Friday. It's time to see you. Join me. Before you get over to Sports Committee, that's kind of thing that's going on over there. If you don't find